Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 199 of the Cincinnati Reds podcast, known as Red Leg Nation Radio. I'm Chad Dotson. With me this week, as he often is, and excited today to talk about actual news in the land of the Cincinnati Reds, it's Jason Linden. How are you today, Jason?
I am well and excited to talk about news in the way that I often do on this podcast right here.
Occasionally, we talk and don't have a whole lot of news, though, to discuss.
It's true, but it's getting close to baseball season now, and actual things are actually happening.
Such as the Reds traded for Mike Trout and Clayton Kershaw today. Am I right?
Right. They traded for both of those now. They are now World Series favorites by consensus.
Exactly.
The rest of the league has decided to forfeit, so the Reds are 162-0.
Yeah, clearly. No, of course, that's not what the news was today, but it was some pretty big news because things are starting to become clearer about the Reds' roster. It's really starting to shape up, and the rotation in particular is starting to shape up. So the Reds made some cuts today, and I'll just run through those briefly, and then we can dig into a few of them with a little more depth. The Reds sent right-handed pitchers Robert Stevenson and Jackson Stevens to Class AAA Louisville. Reassigned to the minor league camp, Tanner Rainey, Dylan Floro, Joe Hudson, Rozell Herrera, Ben Revere, and Mason Williams, and released Oliver Perez. Now, let's talk about, just off the top, because this is what everyone is going to be most interested in, Oliver Perez and Ben Revere. Okay, maybe that's not what everybody's excited about, but Oliver Perez, I thought, had a chance to make this roster as one of these loogies, lefty one-out guys. Did you see that happening?
Yeah, I could see it. I think I was kind of in the he might make it, he might not, you know, camp. It's interesting that they let him go. I think the reaction I'm seeing on Twitter from the beat writers, at least, is that with some of the injuries, they just couldn't afford to carry somebody who you can't really rely on for more than a couple batters. And Perez is right at the very, 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 very end of his career anyway. So, and it's not like he'd exactly burned it up in the spring. So, I don't think it's a bad cut.
Absolutely not surprising. You're right, was not good, but he seemed like he might fill a role and being that veteran guy. Another veteran guy, Ben Revere, reassigned to minor league camp. Now, he's got a choice to make. Revere doesn't have to accept that assignment. He can become a free agent. And I think everyone kind of expects that. Certainly I'll be shocked if he decided to report to the minor league camp rather than explore his options with another organization. Did that one surprise you?
I think that is actually pretty interesting. I was a little bit surprised by it because it seems to me now that it means the Reds are leaning really hard on keeping Philip Ervin up as their fifth outfielder, unless they're going to have Brandon Dixon on the team and have him filling that role. But you don't have a true center field backup otherwise. It makes the outfield situation more interesting. A lot of people I know were really grumpy about the Reds picking up Ben Revere. I wasn't able to manage much actual emotion on it. But it's interesting to me that they are cutting him, not cutting him, but he's likely not going to be a part of the organization for too long.
Certainly not going to be on the opening day roster.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're right in a couple of respects, which is surprising. Ben Revere, I wasn't able to work up a whole lot of disgust over that either, because I really just, if he makes the opening day roster, he's the 25th guy on the roster. And I just, okay, it might be a bad decision to do it, but there are other things to worry about. I think you're right. It could mean Philip Ervin. I would probably put my money on Brandon Dixon getting that last spot, and Shebler being uses the backup center fielder more often than not. So, what's interesting to me though, and you had a tweet about this that I want to explore as we continue to discuss these cuts and what it means for the Reds. You had a tweet earlier today that said you thought that it looked like the Reds may be trying to find something approximating the best 25 guys on the roster. And it reminds me, as soon as this news came out, I got a text from a friend, and he said, this is the text: "The Revere move surprises me. I thought he'd make the team. Releasing Perez surprises me too." And my response to that was, does it give you a little more faith in this front office? And what I meant by that was, it seems to me like if Walt Jocketty were still running this team, Revere and Perez may be on the roster. And instead of that, hey, are we getting somewhere close to what you said, the 25 best players on the team? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, I mean, obviously you're never going to have the 25 best players in your organization on the team. Or if you do, it says something really bad about your minor league system.
That's true.
Because there's always, hopefully, somebody in the minors who really needs to be playing every day and is not on the major league team.
It's kind of like you said the other day about on Twitter. I saw you have a conversation with someone about, you know, these guys are probably the five best starting pitchers in the Reds organization right now, major league starting pitchers. Somebody's like, what about Hunter Green? And you said, well, you know, Hunter Green is going to be great, hopefully, but he's probably not one of the five best guys at getting major league hitters out right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah, but, you know, I think probably the only guys who would fit into that category of some of the 25 best players in the organization, and by best players, I mean able to participate in the major leagues right now. I guess there are three. One is Nick Senzel, who everybody knew is not going to break with the team.
But it's probably clearly in the top 25 if you're putting together your 25-man roster.
And the other two, I would say, are maybe Alex Blandino and Philip Ervin. And they will probably, if they don't make the team, they will slot into the role of in AAA in the event that somebody gets hurt, and then they're up playing every day.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Blandino especially, I think, really could help this team off the bench. And I think he will. Like I said, I think he will at some point this season. So, yeah, I agree. We're kind of close to the top 25 guys, the guys that you would pick if you were really picking the team and you wanted to try to compete this year. And so that's not good for Robert Stevenson, probably, but he gets to go to AAA, and he'll be the, you would presume, one of the anchors of the staff at AAA Louisville. And when there comes a need for another starter in Cincinnati, hopefully he's pitching well enough to earn that opportunity. But I feel like in years past, we've seen guys like Ben Revere and Oliver Perez on the opening day roster because of their veteraniness.
Yeah.
And instead, it looks like we're taking some guys that may have some actual upside. And that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, I agree very much. And I really don't have any problems at all with Stevenson being sent down. I think, obviously, he still has all the potential in the world, but it seems to me that the organization has hit a point where what they're effectively telling him is, you have reached the point at which we need to see consistent results. And he has not been remotely consistent during spring training.
And right, there's no reason to give up on him yet. He pitched relatively well at the end of last season. And what I like about it is they're not going to fool around putting him in the bullpen in Cincinnati to start this season like they did last year. And yeah. So let's send him down. Let's let him start. And hey, like you just said, show it to me. Show me what you got. Prove that you deserve to be up here, and we'll have you up here. Jackson Stevens never had a chance to make it, so a little sort of gloss over him. But it looks sort of like at this point, and this is really the primary thing that I think is interesting about these cuts, is all of a sudden it looks like the starting rotation is pretty much set. And there's one name in here that really, I'm sure, excites you. I know it excites me that's in this group. But right now it looks like it's Homer Bailey, who is going to be the opening day starter, presuming his arm is still attached come opening day. Luis Castillo, Tyler Molly, Sal Romano, and then, you know, Amir Garrett, Brandon Finnegan will be the fifth at whatever point we need a fifth starter in Cincinnati. So what do you think about that group?
I could not be happier. Actually, the only way I could be happier is if Disco were healthy.
Right, yes.
That would be great. But, I mean, in terms of available pitchers, this is who I would pick if they left it up to me. I think you and I are both, I think this is who you were alluding to, really thrilled to see Tyler Molly.
Oh, yes.
making the rotation out of spring training. And it's interesting to me, I mean, who knows what will happen later in the year, but it's interesting to me that they're maybe kind of not going to play service time games with him and just go ahead and let him be up. And then, you know, they've basically rewarded Garrett by making him the sort of 5A or 5B starter, you know, depending on when Finnegan's able to come back. And that's somebody who really did not pitch well for a lot of last year, but was apparently hurt and showed up and really just forced his way into the conversation. And I think that start he had on Sunday really went a long way too, because he had a very nice start. So I think, man, I have no complaints whatsoever about the rotation, like none at all.
Absolutely. Tyler Mahle is a guy that just, as we always say, he just gets people out. And they may still play some service time games with him. They did with Amir Garrett last year. They're sending him down after his first few starts, and they may still do that because they don't have to send him down for long to be able to get that extra year of control. But I hope, again, but it's not my money in that last year. I would love to see him just pitch so well that they cannot send him out. And it's, you know, it's a possibility. I love that guy. Can't wait to watch him pitching every 5 days. The other guy, as you said, Garrett. Now, I do want to touch on Sal Romano in a moment. But Amir Garrett, we always say you can't base your decisions or your roster decisions on spring training stats and what happens in the spring. And it's true. I'm not going to – Garrett has pitched exceptionally well and he has good statistics. But I don't even know what they are, because that's not what I'm looking at when saying that I'm glad this guy worked his way into the conversation. And the way he worked his way into the conversation – it's a byproduct of how he got those stats got to be so good, but just he showed that he was healthy. He's throwing harder than he has ever thrown before. And when you see that stuff, you say, oh, this is the guy that was so high on our list before he got hurt. So I'm really happy that he came out, and he clearly came out to prove something this spring, and could not be more excited to see him steal the chance. And, you know, Finnegan hurt. Finnegan's still, you know, I don't know if and when Brandon Finnegan's going to be ready. He's still young, and he's still talented when healthy. But, yeah, he's had some Devin Mesoraco-level bad luck lately. So, but it's a pretty exciting group. And the guy we're kind of glossing over is Sal Romano, who's a young guy, younger than Amir Garrett, who pitched so well, was the best rookie pitcher in the staff last year, other than the one guy, Luis Castillo, who we continue to gloss over as well because we're expecting so much from him. Sal Romano finishing the year strong last year and coming out this spring and doing nothing but just continuing to be encouraging.
Yeah, I think with Sal, it's just I think he, in order to make the rotation, needed to basically not, you know, be a disaster, and he wasn't, and he was good last year. He's kind of doing exactly what you would expect him to do, which is exactly what we want him to do. So, yeah, we don't mean to ignore Sal at all, and hopefully he just continues to be kind of a constant that can be relied upon every 5 days for a while.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone can argue with him being in that mix. He certainly earned it with his performance last year and then coming into camp ready to go this year. Now, okay, so there are lots of reasons for optimism with this group. Castillo, Mahle, Romano, Garrett, Finnegan, all young, all talented, and it's very exciting. I called it, at redlegnation.com, I called it a full-on rebuild rotation in a lot of ways. We finally get to see what these guys have got, you know, and if they all get better and better at the big league level, it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be exceptionally fun to watch. But can I...
Go ahead.
You're the optimistic guy, and so I'm going to get you to talk me off the ledge a little bit. I'm not really on the ledge, but I can really see how this could be not as big a disaster as last year, but it still could turn into a pretty big mess of a rotation. And I've been thinking this a little bit for a while, and hadn't really put it into words yet. And I happened to see that our friend Mo Egger had a piece at theathletic.com when she made some predictions for the year. And his first prediction was just that, hey, you know, this rotation can be a mess. And I said, yeah, that's what I've been sort of thinking. And the reason why I think, and I don't know that he said it exactly this way, and if you subscribe to The Athletic, you should go read it. And if you don't subscribe to The Athletic, you probably should subscribe. It's pretty good. But the way I look at it is, this rotation could be good, but yet we don't have a single pitcher, not one pitcher, who has both demonstrated an ability to stay healthy and pitched a full big league season. So, I mean, not even one guy that you're sure I can count on this guy. A lot of guys that maybe, a lot of guys that you can be really optimistic about, but that's a ton of uncertainty. And with young pitchers, they're notoriously inconsistent. I'm afraid that it could snowball and we could have a mess again because we just don't have anyone that one or two rocks that you can build the rotation around that we're sure you can build the rotation around. Now tell me how wrong I am, Jason.
I think you are reasonably wrong.
Oh man, that's not very nice. You're overruled.
I'm not very nice. I am paid to crush dreams, Chad. I'm not paid to make dreams come true. No, I think they'll be fine. You're right. Young pitchers are inconsistent. Young pitchers are unpredictable and so on and so forth. But the error bars are very large on young pitchers. And I think what I like about this rotation, this particular group of players, is that with the exception of Homer Bailey, who now seems to be pretty fully recovered, and Brandon Finnegan, there have not been arm troubles here, which would lead one to believe that we can rely on the pitchers to at least start every 5 days. And if they're at least starting every 5 days, then the Reds are in pretty good shape. One or two of them might disappoint, but one or two of them are just as likely to sort of easily clear the bar or whatever for what we would expect of them. And, you know, last year's rotation, I was just looking this up, all of the Reds starting pitchers combined last year only generated 2.8 wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs. And this season, the like super conservative projection has them at 9.3. So that's already an enormous improvement. Now, it doesn't take them into sort of even the middle of the pack in terms of starting rotations, but it's so much better than last year. And, you know, if you think about it, add 7 wins to last year's team, and probably a lot of us feel a lot better about it.
Can we do that? Can we go back somehow and add 7 wins?
Alas, no.
Oh, okay.
But I think that, you know, last year the Reds did kind of figure out who looks like they can do it and who can't. You're right, nobody's done a full season yet, but, you know, Sal Romano has shown us that in a real good half a season that he can pitch to major league pitchers. Same with Luis Castillo. You know, Garrett, yeah, there were the injury issues, but he certainly isn't afraid of major league hitters. And there's no reason for us to doubt Tyler Molly until he gives us reason to. So it's hard for me to not be fairly optimistic. I would also point out that it's just one of these things that's happened over the last couple of years that I'm still adjusting to, but I think we all need to adjust to. There were only 58 pitchers in all of baseball last year who qualified for the ERA title. That's less than 2 per team. So, you know, the new normal or whatever, so to speak, is for you to have maybe one guy who gets to 180 innings pitched and maybe one more who gets to about 160. And then otherwise, you're just kind of cobbling things together.
Okay. I mean, and that's a good effort there, Jason. But I still look at this group and Castillo, Molly, Romano, Garrett. I mean, these guys are all talented. And if all of them do well, or most of them, or half of them do well, good. But still, you're talking about guys that are rookies or second-year pitchers who have not pitched a full year in the big leagues. And I guess I'm just saying you don't want to. I wouldn't go out and bet the ranch that any of them individually are going to be above-average pitcher.
Here, let's say this then. That by the end of this season, the Reds will know how many starting pitchers they need to pay for on the open market.
That's absolutely true. And that's why going into next year, we're going to know. And we won't be able to say that that they haven't had anybody that's been healthy or pitched a full big league season. And hopefully have several of them and have a really good idea what the Reds have.
After this season, there should be no doubts. And after this season, if the Reds have clear holes that they don't fill, then I think a lot of us are going to be justifiably really upset.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Absolutely. So I guess, you know, I think there's the rebuild rotation, you know, with all the young guys, it's fantastic. And I'm happy about it. I'm glad that this is the way that it's, I'm not glad that DeSclafani's hurt. I'd like to have him in that mix, but I'm really glad that some of these guys are getting an opportunity and are so far looking like they're trying to grab that brass ring. And just as I say, it could turn into a mess like last year. The flip side is also true. They could be better than anyone expect. I think that's a possibility. All we got to have is, you know, Castillo to be what we think Castillo can be. Tyler Molly to continue getting people out and maybe being slightly above average or something. And Romano Garrett be average. And all of a sudden, that's pretty good looking rotation, really, in a lot of ways, especially compared to last year's Luis Alberto Bonilla disaster of a rotation. So,
there really is, after last year, there really is nowhere to go but up. And if you get 30 starts each from Castillo, Molly, and Romano, and they're all average to above average, boy, you're feeling pretty good.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Especially going into the following year when you would expect them to even improve. So, I guess. And the other reason why you might want to be optimistic instead of being pessimistic like me is that when the inevitable holes arise, somebody gets hurt or something, someone needs to, you know, for whatever reason, you're going to have to, there are going to be other pitchers that are going to pitch. Hopefully this year it's going to be Robert Stevenson and maybe Cody Reed. And then you got Garrett or Finnegan, whichever one doesn't get the fifth spot. So you got some other guys. It's not going to be the Tim Adelmans. And, you know, bless you, Tim Adelman. Appreciate everything you did for the Reds. It's not going to be the Asher Wojciechowskis. It's not going to be the that Bonilla guy, whatever his name is. So that's, you know, when we have to fill some spots.
Wait a second. Back up and say it right, Chad.
Okay. If you insist. I don't really like saying it, but if you insist, I will. Luis Alberto Bonilla. We're going to get him on every podcast from here on out. It's going to be fantastic. I guess. But, man, if it starts going bad or a couple guys get hurt and, Disco doesn't come back and I don't know. We've already got three pitchers hurt in Finnegan, DeSclafani, and Michael Lorenzen. So I can see that's what is weighing on my mind. The injuries just buried them last year.
But here, and this is just something I would point out, is, you know, I talked about this last time I was on. The three pitchers who are hurt are three pitchers who have been hurt before.
True.
And that's predictive. That's predictive. I've been saying for ages that I wasn't expecting more than one full starter's worth of work from Haley, DeSclafani, and Finnegan together. And so for me, at least, I'm like, yep, this seems about right. We've got one of them in the rotation to start the season. That matches with my expectations.
Well, then all the hopes, though, in that scenario are pinned on guys like Castillo and Mally and Romano not getting hurt. I mean, you got to have those guys stay healthy. And, I'm not going to, again, bet the ranch on any pitcher ever staying healthy. But you're right. They don't have in terms of arm issues, they don't have a history. So that is something to be happy about, I guess. But this is the rotation I kind of wanted to see last year. I'm glad we're finally getting it. So
agree. It's time.
What do you think about Nick Senzel at second base?
I think that Nick Senzel is going to end up playing the infield wherever the Reds feel like they need a bat.
You know, this week, Nick Senzel was reassigned to minor league camp as well. And I don't believe we've had a chance to talk about this since the last podcast. So a lot of people on what I call hashtag Reds Twitter went nuts, as they do, because that's what Reds Twitter does. About, oh my gosh, does that mean he's not going to be a second base or a shortstop now? Are they abandoning the shortstop already? What's going on? He must just not be very good at shortstop. Why aren't they playing him at shortstop? Why are they making this decision? And my response was, okay, listen, slow down. There's nothing the Reds announced, of course, when they went down, that he's going to be playing primarily at second base at Louisville. And he's been in camp, got to camp early, and been working on was working on second base before camp started. Since camp started, he's been strictly shortstop and third base. And my response to all that was, what have the Reds done here that makes anyone think that Nick Senzel won't play wherever the Reds have a need? Does anybody think that because he's going to start the season playing second base at Louisville, that he, if the Reds need a third baseman, if Eugenio Suarez, let's hope not, gets hurt, or if, let's say that Jose Peraza falls on his face, that the Reds can't move him to either of those positions? No, he's going to play somewhere on the infield. He's capable of playing all four infield positions. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're completely right. And I think, you know, the fact that they're playing him at second base, like, in terms of the skill set that you need Nick Senzel to practice, that's served better at second base than it is at third base if he's not going to play shortstop. And the Reds are going to have a couple of probably defense-first shortstops in AAA who are going to play shortstop most days. But, you know, Senzel can be over there at second. You know, they can still get an idea for his range and things of that nature. He can still work on turning double plays and all that just from the other side. But, like, nobody doubts that he has, for instance, the arm. If you have the arm to play shortstop or third base, you sure have the arm to play shortstop. I'm not worried about it. Okay, play second base and we'll see. And, you know, maybe Jose Peraza comes on and is great, and then maybe they can use his help at second base and he plays second base. Whatever. If the reverse is true, then that's fine too. But I'm not too worried about where they're playing Nick Senzel in Louisville.
No, there's no reason to worry about it. I mean, yeah, but what if Jose Peraza is the guy that we saw in the second half of last season at the plate, and defensively he's a whiz? You know, I could see Peraza earning that. He's still young. He's a former really top prospect. At that point, what if they trade Scooter Gennett? You know, I think the Reds have not made any decisions yet. And the way I put it was, giving Senzel time at second base just gives the Reds more options, depending on what happens with the big club, specifically with Peraza and Gennett. But the one absolute guarantee here is very soon Nick Senzel will be starting for the Cincinnati Reds at one position or another. And I don't see any reason to sweat the details about that right now.
No, nor do I. And, you know, the only people who have any reason to sweat the details right now is anyone on the Reds who wants to be the starting second baseman or shortstop.
Absolutely.
One of you is going to be the odd man out here in somewhere between 3 weeks and 2 to 3 months.
Absolutely. And I don't know who that's going to be. The Reds probably don't even lean one way or the other. They may not know. They may lean, but it's just, I don't know. I think it's fine. I think whatever. They've worked him out now at three different infield positions. He played all three of them in college. If he's adequate at all three defensive positions, what kind of flexibility does that give this organization to fill in whatever it turns out the hole is going to be? I think it's fantastic.
Well, and you know, something we haven't talked about at all yet is that apparently there has been a willingness expressed for Suarez to move to shortstop if needed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, great. Like, we have all of these elite players who can play multiple positions, like the Cubs. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Imagining the Reds being like the Cubs, but, you know, the times are what they are.
They have changed, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, cool. If, you know, if Senzel and Suarez are just kind of playing wherever at the time, and you've got, I don't know, Blandino sliding around there or what. I'll say this right now. I would not be at all surprised if right at this moment Alex Blandino were a better player than Scooter Gennett, simply because I think they probably are very similar with the bat, but Blandino is a much better fielder
than
Scooter Gennett is.
I think you can make that case. Absolutely. So, I don't know, you know, it's like I said, Senzel's the one guy that if you're putting together your best 25, like we discussed earlier, Senzel's in there. I don't know where you have him. That's a tough decision the Reds are going to have to make. But there's so many different options there that it's just fantastic. So that was we talked about there being a lot of news this week. The first was the cuts today, and that was news. The other was Nick Senzel getting sent down, which wasn't unexpected. The news that he was going to be playing second base was a little unexpected. And then... the other big piece of news this week that I really want to talk about just a moment and really expound upon. some is that since our last podcast, we may have to go to a daily podcast if the Reds keep having big news like this all the time. But this is, to me, exciting, something that a lot of us have called for a while, and that's that they signed a seven-year contract with supposedly third baseman, Eugenio Suarez. And I don't know, this really made me happy. You could tell in the press conference they had, I don't know if you got a chance to see the video of that, that Dick Williams was happy, but Suarez was absolutely over the moon about it. Even though everyone's saying, why has he signed this contract that's so team-friendly? And it seems like it might be team-friendly a little bit. But on the other hand, he just became a multimillionaire. He's very happy with it. He loves being in Cincinnati. He's got some stability for his family. Win-win. And I'm so happy that Eugenio Suarez is apparently going to be a member of this team for the foreseeable future. What are your thoughts, Jason?
I would pretty much echo everything you said. It seems like a really... It certainly is a great thing for the Reds. You know, I think there's probably to some fact, and I think this was even alluded to in some quote or something I saw from Dick Williams that, I don't want to attribute that to Dick Williams. I read somewhere somebody pointing out that basically the free agent market has apparently shifted in very interesting ways that are going to be controversial as the year progresses. But if you're in a position like Eugenio Suarez, you might think, well, I better just go ahead and take this money now because who knows what's going to happen in a few years. And you know, again, he seems very happy. Obviously, gets along well in Cincinnati, and the city, you know, the team has certainly taken to him. And I mean, all of us love him. I think he's in terms of general love on social media or whatever, I think he's kind of right behind Joey Votto right now.
And his reputation, I hear from people within the organization and from people just observing from outside, he works his tail off. He's just, there's really nothing to dislike about this kid. Always smiling, always there early working. It is exciting. So I think you're right. There are a number of things that have possibly contributed to him taking this deal that might have been less than he could obtain on the open market, I guess. But then again, we've just seen an open market this offseason that has not been very open for whatever the reasons. Guys haven't been getting those big dollar contracts this year, certainly not multi-year contracts. So Eugenio Suarez goes to arbitration, loses in arbitration, and then sees what's going on out there and says, hey, I can get $60+ million guaranteed for my family. Never going to have to worry about money again. Guaranteed, whatever happens. Seeing Devin Mesoraco next to him and Homer Bailey might also make him think, you know, not a bad idea to grab this money when I can. The other thing I think that really nobody's talking about, and it may not even be a consideration, but, you know, Eugenio Suarez is from Venezuela. And Venezuela has just completely collapsed over the last little bit. And, you know, he's got family in Venezuela. And that amount of money being guaranteed to him, that might be why another reason why he's a little more willing to take it. But you put all of it together. He loves Cincinnati. And, again, I would encourage anybody to go watch the video, if you can find it, of his press conference with Dick Williams, because he's just thrilled. He's so excited to be a Cincinnati Red. And if you didn't love him before, you will when you see that. So, but you already love him, right?
I already love him. And that's actually a very good point about Venezuela, is that that country is in dire, dire, dire straits right now. And I know a lot of players, a lot of minor leaguers have made a serious effort to just stay permanently in the U.S. Yes. Because things have gotten so rough there.
So, and that may have had some... Let's break down a little bit the Suarez extension. It's going to cover the next three seasons, which were arbitration seasons for Suarez, and then four full years of free agency. So, and there's actually a team option for an eighth year on the contract at the end of it. So if the Reds picked up that team option, they'd have Suarez through age 34. He's 26 right now. So he'll make $4.5 million this year, which is a little more than what he got in the arbitration hearing. But that includes there's going to be a $2 million signing bonus on top of that. And then $7.3 million in 2019, $9.5 million in 2020, and then $10.8 million, $11.3 million there for the end. So And then that 2025 club options for $15 million. So with a $2 million buyout. So, yeah, I don't know. You look around and you say, this guy's he's an elite defensive player, outstanding offensive player last year, you know, almost four wins above replacement, I guess, or in that neighborhood.
He was an average of 3.9 between Baseball Reference and FanGraphs last year.
And we've been saying it. This is exactly the type of guy that the Reds need to be looking to sign long term.
Yes, absolutely. Between the value that the Reds are getting, no one can complain about the Reds getting this contract. Nobody.
Someone will complain.
You know what? I have seen people complain about it, and I will pull no punches. Anyone complaining that this is a bad contract is an idiot.
I think you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, I don't see any downside to this at all. I just don't. He could get hurt tomorrow, but that doesn't change. Kind of like with Devin Mesoraco, it doesn't change whether it was a smart move or not. If he gets hurt tomorrow, okay. I think you look at all the information that the Reds have right now. They see a guy that's working his tail off that has improved demonstrably every year and is just 26 years old. And hey, that's a guy you want to take a chance on.
Well, yeah, and one of the most common complaints, at least among a certain segment of the fan base, is, oh, the Reds never keep anybody. Oh, the Reds never keep anybody. The Reds kept Suarez.
Yeah. Hey, haven't we been saying when the time comes, they're going to be ready to spend that money again?
And this perhaps is the first trickings of it. I think we are all very interested to see what happens in 2000 in the next offseason, depending on what happens this year. But it could be quite intriguing over the next few years.
Well, the way you said it is right. This is the first shot over the bow of the rebuild, the good ship rebuild turning around, and going into the area where they hope to be have a competitive window. And this might be the very first. I got to say, though, my favorite Eugenio Suarez, my favorite thing about Eugenio Suarez, if you don't mind me saying, is this, Jason Linden. I'm sure you know how the Reds acquired Eugenio Suarez.
I certainly do.
The Reds, oh man, this is one of the greatest trades in the history of this organization. This great young player who the Reds just signed to a possibly 8-year deal if they pick up the option was acquired in a trade for the bloated corpse of Alfredo Simon. How is that even possible?
I don't know. Good job, Reds. For all of the flack that Walt Jocketty takes, we do need to give him credit for that one.
Yes, that one.
Because that is miraculous. I mean, talk about getting a player for another player who is superior in every conceivable way. I mean, just what a fabulous trade.
And we'll be a Red for a decade or more, while Simon was just, just not good. Let's just say that. Just not good with Detroit and has not been good since.
Not good is perhaps the best way to describe everything about Alfredo Simon.
That's the absolute kindest way to describe it. So, really, there should be a Detroit area prosecutor looking to figure out if he can charge Walt Jocketty with some kind of grand larceny or something. I mean, because that was just, it was highway robbery. So
yeah, that was. And didn't I see where apparently, I think this was on one of the broadcasts, apparently Jim Leland was working in the Tigers when that trade was made and was just lividly against them trading Suarez, and they did it anyway.
I think that was a C. Trent Rosecrans story. He caught up with Jim Leland, who said that. So, yeah, and of course, this is a talented young guy. Oh, my goodness. And you just give him away for really nothing. Very exciting. So, Eugenio Suarez, welcome to the crowd. And, last year, you remember that guy, Brandon Phillips? Remember him?
I do remember that guy, Brandon Phillips.
Yeah, he used to play for the Reds. I've got a son, and he, as do you, and my son's favorite player was Brandon Phillips. Always had been since he first started liking baseball, that was his guy. And Brandon Phillips was a likable guy. I can see why kids would be drawn to him. And so when he got traded, my son was a little upset, but he sulked for a little while, but then he said, well, I got to pick a new player. And he really surprised me. There's a number of guys I thought it might be. And it was Eugenio Suarez. And he picked him. I was like, oh, yeah, that's good. This kid knows. So, again, that's an anecdote. It's not anything that should be considered when determining whether or not this was a good deal. But in my household, it was an extra special good deal.
Excellent.
All right. Now, where do we go from here? This roster is beginning to take a little bit of shape. Jason, Are we ready to predict a little bit about what the final roster is going to look like? Who are these guys are going to make these last spots on the roster? What about who the backup infielder is going to be?
Let's just go position by position because I need to kind of clarify this in my head. Obviously, catcher, you've got Tucker and Mesoraco.
Yes. Who, if, and this is a huge if Mesoraco is healthy, I can see a scenario where they are among the most productive, certainly top half. In the majors of catchers because they complement each other pretty well.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody's too worried about catcher. That's looking pretty good. First base, obviously the greatest player ever to grace the planet, Joey Votto.
What happens when Joey Votto doesn't takes a day off? Who are they going to play at first base?
Joey Votto doesn't take days off.
Exactly.
the Reds did just pick this guy up off waivers. I'm not sure how to say his first name even, but
yes.
Kenys Vargas.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, he's only ever played first base. You know, a lot of people are worked up about this. I kind of am wondering if it's one of those things where they have grabbed him and maybe they're going to try to work a trade and have him, like, you know, with whoever they picked him up from and have him be their, like, first baseman in Louisville or something like that. I don't know. It would be one of those things where it wouldn't surprise me, and they happen all the time. Where a player gets claimed, and then 2 weeks later, he's back with the team he started with.
Yeah, I mean, you can ultimately have him in AAA, then I think it probably makes a little sense if Brandon Dixon, for example, makes the roster, who we'll talk about in a moment, I'm sure. You know, a little bit of organizational depth, you need it. Otherwise, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense because you don't really need someone who's strictly a backup first baseman in Cincinnati because, as you said, Votto doesn't take days off, so. It would be curious if he does make the rotation. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with him. He's either in Louisville or he's not in the Reds organization, probably by opening day.
And so then we've got Jeanette Peraza and Suarez finish out the infield, and then backup infielders. Let's see, who's it down now? It kind of feels like Brandon Dixon has made the team.
I think so.
I'm not real wild about Brandon Dixon. I'll tell you, I think people are a little bit seduced by his spring training stats. His minor league numbers have not been particularly good. He's probably the 25th guy, but okay, let me put it this way. I can deal with Dixon or Pennington, but not both.
Well, here's where you're wrong. First of all, I'm not seduced by his spring training numbers. That's not what interests me most. What interests me, the reason why I'm on the Brandon Dixon bandwagon is that glorious hair, that curly mane. Wow, that guy needs to be in a Reds uniform. 26 years old this year, and yes, this spring, .342 average, .390 on base, .684 slugging, 4 home runs, a couple of them really long home runs. Certainly we've never seen anything that's in 22 games, 41 plate appearances, so we've certainly never seen anything like that. Last year in Louisville, he did play pretty much a full season, almost 500 plate appearances, .264, .327 on base, .457 slugging, 16 homers. I mean, you know, okay, 25 years old in Louisville last year. Okay. I mean.
Yeah, my personal opinion on Dixon is that he's, I think, probably a marginal major leaguer. Unless he were to pull the thing that, you know, some players have done and kind of get the plate discipline in order. If he were walking a little bit more than he had walked in the minors, I would have a lot less of a problem with it. But we'll see. But I do think I would like the Reds to have somebody on the bench as a backup infielder who can genuinely hit. And I think Blandino for certain can hit. But of course, you know, whoever's up is probably not going to be up for that long because Senzel is going to come up soon. So whoever makes the roster, I mean, they really are going to be the 25th guy. Somebody's going back down before too terribly long.
Yeah, I think the guys that you're talking about are the guys that are in the mix. Dixon, yeah. Alex Blandino, Cliff Pennington, who we do want to talk about in a moment. But here's why I like Dixon in the mix. Dixon, do you know what position Dixon has played more than any in his minor league career?
You know, I don't. He played third base mostly for Louisville last year, I feel like.
He did last year for Louisville, and third base is the position he's played second most of any position. He's played 310 games at second base. So we got a guy with a little bit of pop. He's played first base. He's played second base. He's played third base. He's played left field. He's played center field. He's played right field. He's basically played everywhere except for catcher and shortstop. So I think that gives you a little bit of a level of a versatility that you can plug him in different places. And I could see him, because of that versatility, and because he does have a little bit of pop in that bat, making the roster. If it's between Blandino and Pennington for a pick, I don't think there should be any choice there. Should there?
No.
Why would you pick Cliff Pennington over Alex Blandino?
Only if you want a true shortstop. And, you know, Blandino is, I mean, I've seen him play a fair bit. He's not a disaster at shortstop. I think it really depends. If you think that you eventually want Alex Blandino to be a starter for you, then you send him to AAA. But if you think, which is the role that he might very well be best suited for, that he's more of a super sub, then I think you keep him up. Because, you know, if, say, Peraza gets dinged up and needs a couple of days off, Blandino absolutely can do that job. And he absolutely is good enough defensively to play second or third on a regular basis. He's never played the outfield, but, you know, I think most guys can adapt to a corner outfield spot without too much problem. But he can hit.
He can.
And he is really not bad defensively at all. He's really, at second especially, he's, I think, above average defensively. So I would much prefer, if you're going to have a sort of super utility guy, I would much prefer Blandino to Dixon, just because I think he has a higher ceiling and probably a higher floor also.
Possibly. And I love, what I love about Blandino is the idea that I'm not ready to give up on him being the Reds starting second baseman at some point. I mean, he's hit everywhere he's been, pretty much. He had a down year there, I guess, or two, where it was like, what happened to this guy? But he's rebounded. You know, last year in Louisville, just 390 on base percentage in Louisville. You know, he's, again, this spring, we're talking about a very small sample size again. But, you know, 364 average, 417 on base. He's done nothing this spring. He's 25 years old. So maybe you send him to Louisville and say, you're our starting second baseman. And then if we move Scooter and we put Senzel at shortstop, then, you know, you're in that mix. A lot's going to depend on who goes where with Nick Senzel and how Jose Peraza does. So I don't know. I guess if all things being equal, he's the best player of the three, I think, that we're talking about. Dixon.
You know, it sounds like, I guess, sort of talking between us and also now just for me at least, really looking at the options, it sounds like what I think we would both prefer is our backup infielders effectively being Dixon and Blandino, with, you know, Pennington probably getting a lot of time in AAA. And if something serious were to happen where the Reds needed somebody who could play shortstop on a daily basis, then you call up Pennington.
Right. Yeah. I think so. If you need a backup shortstop, Blandino can probably handle that for the game or two here and there. But if Peraza's hurt and you don't think Senzel's ready for it, Pennington, you know, is a guy. So, yeah. But what I like about Dixon, of course, is that he gives you enough flexibility. Maybe you can keep Blandino and Pennington if you want to, because you got a backup outfielder.
And he does hit the ball hard. I mean, the park here in Louisville is not an easy one to hit home runs in. As, you know, as frankly we saw with Jesse Winker, who all of a sudden had a lot more power in Cincinnati than he ever showed in Louisville. And, boy, Dixon has hit some monsters.
Oh, and for those of you that haven't listened over the last couple of years, Jason, of course, sits in that press box at Louisville a lot and watches the games. Jason, you always said, man, I just can't tell you how many times Winker would hit a ball, like kill a ball, and it would die right before it got to the fence or something. It was just uncanny. You mentioned it several times. And of course, we saw maybe he does have a little bit of power. But Dixon was powering him out of there, huh?
Yeah, I mean, only 16 home runs, but that's a lot. 16 home runs is a lot of home runs in Louisville.
Yeah. Well, if the Reds could probably keep all three, I guess, if I'm counting correctly here, and depending on how many relievers they take, they could probably keep all three if they just have one other backup outfielder because you can let Dixon be. So, which I guess we're talking. Actually, no, it's just the big four: Billy Hamilton, Scott Schebler, Adam Duvall, Jesse Winker, and then let Dixon be the fifth.
If Dixon is your fifth outfielder, then yeah, they can keep them all. I guess the other alternative for fifth outfielder is Philip Ervin.
Right.
And that's the same deal. If you think he might be a starter, you probably send him to AAA for a little bit. If you're more in the you're going to be an extra outfielder camp, then you keep him on the roster. It really just depends.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what the Reds, what they're looking for. They've still got 36 guys in camp. And so there's still some guys who I think can maybe be in the mix, maybe can still make the team. Got a lot of relievers, I guess. And now that Lorenzen's not going to be ready for opening day, I think that Jared Hughes and Hernandez, the two guys they signed, free agents, are going to make the team. And other than Lorenzen, I guess you pretty much know what you're getting out of the bullpen. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, I guess, to waste too much time discussing that.
Well, we can at least perhaps take a moment and address the fact that, I don't know about you, but I'm not really terrified of the bullpen this year, and that's a nice feeling.
Oh, I think that's, I talked about my fears with the rotation, and I think that's a great point, Jason. I think we've got some guys there. Yeah, they signed a couple of 32-year-old relievers. And I'm like, what are you doing? And then I look at them and I say, wait a minute. That really helps stabilize the bullpen. These are guys that throw ground balls and have been effective and gives you a couple of guys you can sort of depend on in the sixth or seventh inning.
Yeah, I think the worst-case scenario for the Reds' bullpen this year is that they are totally adequate.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. And I don't know if they're going to be much better than adequate, but there's a pretty good chance they're going to be. And then you still have Iglesias in the back and Wandy Peralta.
Yeah. And Mike Lorenzen, if he's able to come back.
So I think that's a great point. I think that I don't really have those fears about the bullpen. And after all these years of it terrifying me when it got to bullpen time, I mean, we're not talking about the nasty boys out there, although Rosell Iglesias is probably nastier than any of the nasty boys in terms of his stuff. But should be a bullpen that you can depend on, and that's really all we can ask for.
Yes, I agree. And it will be nice to just be like, oh, here's a completely ordinary major league relief pitcher coming in out of the bullpen instead of here's someone who might be really good but might also walk everyone in the world and then give up on them.
And again, I feel like we criticize Asher Wojciechowski too much, and we shouldn't, because Asher Wojciechowski did some good things for the Reds. But, we don't have any of those guys that you're calling off their couch to come pitch for you. You got guys that have demonstrated success in the big leagues and who, they're not gonna terrify you. So that's a great thing. It's a great thing. So, and we'll wrap it up here. We do need to wrap it up. But the one thing that just you hit on it a little bit about this rotation, but just the team as a whole, finally, and especially when Nick Senzel gets here later this, hopefully this spring, early summer, when Nick Senzel gets to Cincinnati, you're going to be able to say, oh man, this team that we hope is going to be competitive is really starting to shape up. It's starting to come into place. And this year, we're really going to learn about some of these guys, and we're going to know by the end of the year where the Reds have to fill in holes. And the hope is that enough of the young guys do well enough that the holes are minimized. But we'll know one way or the other. And there's some reason for excitement. And even if the Reds lose a lot of games this year, I think we'll be able to see, maybe not in wins and losses, although I do think we'll see it at progress in wins and losses, but we'll be able to see, all right, it's taking shape. Does that make sense to you, Jason?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I think I'm at the point now with what the Reds are seeming to do with their roster. And, I've said before, I really want to see a 500 team this year, and I will continue to say that. The Reds have, frankly, I don't think any excuse to not be a winning team next year. Yeah. Doesn't mean they're going to be in the playoffs, but if they're not looking to post a winning record next year, it's because they have not gone out and done the things that they need to do to make themselves a winning team.
Yeah, something will have gone horribly wrong at that point, and there'd be some justifiable criticism. I agree with that. And I thought the Reds had a pretty good chance of being at least 500 this year until, Antonio DiSclafani. That doesn't really work like... No, I'm not going to say it again, but... until he and Brandon Finnegan and now Michael Lorenzen got hurt. And I started thinking, oh, here we go again. But I thought, until then, I thought, oh, this team really has a chance. And There's no question in my mind that if things break right and a lot of these young guys do well, this team could surprise everybody. Could be the surprise team in the league. Now, I'm not saying they're a World Series team, but they could surprise everybody, couldn't they? That potential's there.
Yes, that's a very good point. You know, I think the last few years, especially with what's happened with the pitching, have gotten a lot of us into the hand-wringing phase. But this, there is an equal chance that things could break right for this team. And it could be June and people would be like, hey, the Reds are not fading.
Yeah.
You know, we could be into that kind of circumstance. And it's fun to at least have that potential again.
Right. And, you know, June gets here and Nick Senzel's here the rest of the season. And some of these young pitchers, we know which ones are earning their keep. Could be a pretty good team second half. Really could.
It really could.
All right, as a way to end on an optimistic note, on another exciting note that really gets me worked up, you been watching any of this NCAA basketball tournament, Jason?
I have watched very little of it, but I hear something happened to one of your alma maters.
Oh, man. My alma mater made history, Jason.
That's one way to look at it.
Hey, listen, I'm going to be a big man about this because people – tweet at me all the time and say, quit talking about Virginia basketball. You know, I've been excited all season about this great team. Number one overall seed, ACC regular season champions, ACC tournament champions. They dominated the ACC. Went 20-1 against ACC teams in both regular season and third of it. Historically good team. And so I've been so excited and was planning to go down to Charlotte for their second round game because, of course, they're going to win in the first round. No 16 seeds ever upset number one. And I probably would have been in Atlanta right now for the Sweet 16. So, yeah, Virginia lost to the University of Maryland at Baltimore County, Jason. So I just figured I feel like I needed to address that because I've been all season long irrationally exuberant.
But at least we can I will give you this. At least UMBC did even though they lost their second round game, they put up a really good fight in their second round game, too.
You know, I got nothing bad to say about that bunch there.
Yeah. So that wasn't like, that's a team that clearly showed up with a plan and a team that was able to do a lot better than a lot of people expected of them. And, you know, that's on their end. They get to be that team forever, the first team to ever do that.
They played really hard and they outworked Virginia. And, you know, their coach is a former Virginia ball boy and his dad was a former assistant at Virginia. And their best player, both his parents graduated from Virginia. I mean, there's all these links, but hey, more power to them. The worst part for me is just that as a Virginia fan, I'm now going to be seeing the highlights of this game every single March for the rest of my life. So that's going to be fun. But whatever, it's sports. Sports are fun. Who cares?
And anyway, at the end of this year when the Reds win the World Series, it will go a long way to making things better.
Exactly. Now you're talking. All right, that's a good place to wrap it up, I guess. This is a Red Leg Nation Radio episode number 199. Next episode will be our landmark 200th episode, which is hard to believe. You can find Jason Linden on Twitter at Jason Linden. I'm at Dotson C. RedLegNation.com, where we're talking about the Reds every single day all throughout the season, and at Red Leg Nation on Twitter. Facebook.com/RedLegNation. We're everywhere you look for Red Leg Nation is wherever you get your news about the Reds. You need to, if you would, please go and subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you subscribe to podcasts. We're there. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. As I always say, it helps out. Also, go to Amazon.com. There's a new book out called The Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds, and we've had some very kind comments.
Buy Chad's book.
Buy Chad's book. Exactly. I should have put that at the top of this podcast because nobody's listening now. Buy the book and leave a good review if you like it. And if you don't, keep your mouth shut, as I always say. Jason, always fun, buddy. Good talking to you.
Always a good time, sir.
All right. For Jason Linden, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app and join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.